Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield. Made by you.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Don? You know what, I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3 here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
Hello, I'm Harry Wilburn. I present Steel and Wire every Wednesday, 10 a.m. Americana, bluegrass, American roots, and more. Lots more. Lots of guests, lots of local music and musicians. That's Steel and Wire, Wednesday, 10 a.m.
You're listening to fabulous Harry Wilburn on Steel and Wire.
It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
This is Sheffield Live.
N-E-X-T.
Good morning. Welcome to the Live Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM on digital if you're in South Yorkshire or sheffieldlive.org. I do not think the website is working at the minute, but all being well, it'll pop up later and the podcast will be there. You've got Julie and Paul here, as usual, talking about science in all its different forms. Live Science Radio Show, of course. We'll be talking to our PG later in the show as well. This week, and indeed every first Saturday of the month, it's Phil Movett from the Mexburn Swinton Astronomical Society. If you tuned in last week, he, instead of doing his astro clinics, it was the fifth Saturday, he did his general update. And this week, aha, because it's coming up to Christmas, he's doing Christmas gift ideas. At this very moment, I believe he's on a Santa run. And I think he's dressed as a reindeer this year. I think he was dressed as Santa last year, but I think he's reindeer this year. There's 5 of the reindeers and 10 elves. I can't wait to see the photographs. I'm sure he'll tell us all about it later. The weather's not the best, but there you go. All being well, next week, and indeed every second Saturday of the month, our guest speaker's Dr. Ogo Osmo. So we'll look forward to that. Next up is, an interesting one about fluidisation.
Yeah.
Fluidation.
Fluoride in drinking water. The UK is preparing for the biggest expansion of fluoridisation since the 1980s. The mineral fluoride occurs naturally in water, but more is added to the water supply in some areas to help prevent tooth decay. The new proposal includes much of the North East and some parts of Cumbria and North Yorkshire. According to the British Dental Association, BDA, the plan to add fluoride to drinking water in more areas in Northern England would help to improve dental health, particularly in socially deprived areas, as these areas are consistently rated as having very poor oral health.
And the other problem about tooth decay, particularly in children, but not just limited to children, is the impact of modern diets, ultra-processed foods, sweets, fizzy drinks and things. And if you do tune in regularly, you'll know that Chris Dale over the last year or so has been talking about ultra-processed food and the impact on our health. It is going to come in at the end of December. Christmas doesn't stop us from doing the Live Science Show.
No.
And he's going to be talking about that and refreshing on a few other things. But before we move on any further, I'm going to talk about chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, or COPD. So throughout the day, your lungs work on autopilot, taking around 25,000 breaths each day. We do it without even thinking. But for the 1.4 million people in the UK who have respiratory conditions, COPD, the simple act of breathing can be difficult and laboured. So what is COPD? Well, it stands for, as I said, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. It's a long-term, incurable and irreversible condition where narrowed airways cause air to get trapped in the lungs. Now, people with COPD usually have bronchitis and or emphysema, and lung tissue gets damaged, airways are inflamed and blocked with mucus, and the body struggles to take in oxygen and expel carbon dioxide. And COPD is different from asthma. Asthma symptoms are usually brought on by triggers, and inhaled medication can open the airways, whereas with COPD, inhalers only partially open the airways. So who's at risk of COPD then? Well, your lungs are like a sponge, soaking up pollutants, bacteria and viruses from the environment, which is something Dr. Olga Osmo often talks about when he's on the show, talking particularly about air quality and the impact of air pollution on your lungs. So it's a similar thing. COPD mainly affects middle-aged or older adults who smoke or have previously smoked. It can also be caused by exposure to dust, fumes and chemicals. Now, the dust one can actually come from vehicles, particulate matter. We've talked about that often on this show, about the impact of small dust particles getting into your lungs and inflaming your lungs and your windpipe. But it could also be that you could have COPD because of a history of childhood asthma. Interesting, this South Yorkshire, because of its industrial past, smoking prevalence, which means a lot of people smoked, and social deprivation, has a higher percentage of COPD than the national average. So the percentage of the population with COPD in South Yorkshire is 2.6%. So what are the symptoms of COPD then? It can cause mild symptoms to severe attacks of breathlessness, and you may get flare-ups, especially during winter. So symptoms include becoming short of breath easily when doing everyday tasks, a cough that lasts a long time, persistent wheezing, coughing up more phlegm than usual, frequent chest infections, loss of appetite and or weight loss, swelling in the ankles and fatigue. Now, many people dismiss symptoms such as some of those as smoker's cough, but without treatment for COPD, lungs can become significantly damaged and flare-ups worsen to the point of needing hospital treatment or even becoming fatal. Now, COPD or chronic obstructive pulmonary disease is one of the leading causes of death worldwide, which is something I didn't know. So how is COPD diagnosed and treated? Well, if you think you have COPD, or your GP should perform a spirometry test, to measure your lung function. This is a simple test where you blow hard and fast into a machine to check your lung capacity. If you're diagnosed with COPD, you can be referred for pulmonary rehabilitation. And this is a six-week NHS program combining exercise with education about looking after your lungs. The twice-weekly group sessions include a gym class to strengthen your muscles, which aids your breathing. And the pulmonary team also teach breath control techniques and how to cope when feeling out of breath. They can also give smoking quitting support, oxygen assessments for oxygen needs and dietary advice, and educate patients and their families about how to self-manage COPD. So if you think, sounds like you have COPD, go and see your GP and get it checked out. Every breath you take by the Police, because we're talking about COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. Go and get it checked out if you think you may have symptoms. Next up, quickly, this week's environment updates. First up, climate modelling.
Climate modelling, we know that around the world, heat waves are increasing in frequency and intensity. But now a study published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences journals has pinpointed a new phenomenon. Repeated heat waves that are so extreme, they exceed what any climate modelling can predict or explain. The study's author, Dr. Kai Kornhuber, said that the findings raise questions about the ability of climate models to provide adequate estimates of relations between global mean temperature changes and regional climate risks.
Next up, on a similar subject, coral bleaching. Although the climate crisis is leading to more frequent mass bleaching of coral reefs all over the world, parts of Australia's Great Barrier Reef have managed to escape the worst of the damage year after year. A new paper published in the Science Advances Journal found that this was due to a process called upwelling, where deeper, cooler waters mix with warmer surface waters, keeping the coral protected. This phenomenon is expected to continue even as the climate crisis worsens. So watch this space.
Plastic pollution. Countries have failed yet again to reach a landmark agreement on tackling plastic pollution after more than 2 years of negotiations. More than 200 nations met recently in South Korea for what was meant to be a final round of talks. But deep divisions remain between a group of nearly 100 high-ambition countries calling for plastic to be phased out and oil-producing nations who warned this would affect the world's development.
All sounds familiar. Next up, an interesting one. Green burials. Cemeteries in the US are becoming rewilding hubs after the pandemic prompted a rethink of how burial sites are managed. Some US cemeteries are abandoning neat lawns in favour of drought-resistant plants and pollinator-friendly wildflowers. There's also been a large increase in the number of US cemeteries allowing green burials where bodies are buried without embalming fluids and in biodegradable caskets.
Now, this one is very interesting.
Super interesting.
Right. Solar paint, yes. Mercedes-Benz has announced that he's developing a solar paint that would generate enough electricity to power a car for more than 7,000 miles a year. The paint is permanently active and creates a charge when the vehicle is parked, which is most of the time for the average car, and could provide 62% of the energy needed for a driver in Stuttgart, where the company is based.
Interesting. And one that might catch our Phil's ear, stargazing. Eastbourne has been named the best spot in England for stargazing because of low light and air pollution, as well as minimal cloud cover. Four other Sussex towns were also hailed for their clear skies. That's Brighton, Hove, Hastings and Worthing. And Dundee took the overall UK top spot for viewing the night sky. Data came from the lightpollutionmap.info and weather forecaster openmeteo.com. And it was used by the company Jeff Bett to assign scores out of 100 for 100 UK towns. All interesting.
Next, blue tongue disease.
Oh, this is sad.
A Christmas market's reindeer parade has been cancelled due to an outbreak of blue tongue disease. Reindeers were due to feature at the Beverley Festival of Christmas taking place tomorrow, but the event falls within a restriction zone for the viral illness, which has brought in on 17th September by DEFRA, the government's Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs. The disease, which does not affect humans, is carried by midges and affects cattle and sheep, causing problems with swallowing, lameness and stiffness.
Poor reindeers. Oh. Finally, books of the year. With only a few weeks until Christmas, there's still time to pick up some of the best science and nature books of the year for gifts, including Nature's Ghosts by Sophie Yeo, who writes about how the past should inform future conservation practices, and Clear Blue Sky by Rob Jackson, who believes we can restore Earth's atmosphere in a generation.
Thank you. 307.
The hay bounds across the page, past castles white and fair, to dreaming chessmen on their boards, with a fool's mate as a snare.
Listen, Learn, Read On by Deep Purple. Great track, 1968. We're talking about what books you might want to buy for Christmas, all related to science and nature. Just tuned in, of course, listening to the Live Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM, talking about science in all its different forms. We should have had PG on the line. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning.
Yes, a very grey morning it is.
And yes, still a bit drafty and windy, isn't it?
It is. I think we've all touched wood. We've escaped the worst of it. I think some of the other parts of the country are already getting hit with it.
Yes,
it's Wales has terribly been affected. Sort of 90-mile-an-hour wind.
Oh,
on the coast.
Yeah, it's not good, is it? Not good. So, what's caught your eye in the science news then?
Well, it wasn't particularly science news at first. I caught a documentary on the BBC, Logan Paul, and Bad Influencer is what it says. And Logan Paul is one of the modern creatures that are online influencers, and the following of 6 odd million people. very engaged in that online world. But it sort of started to talk about his dealings with cryptocurrencies, which we covered a few years back now, I think, cryptocurrency, and I explained about the process. But just to refresh, the Bitcoin inventor is named Satoshi Nakamoto, but nobody's yet been able to identify who or who it is. There's no sort of lead in that at the moment.
Oh, interesting.
Several people have been sort of put in the frame but have stepped out of it. But Bitcoin's a type of digital currency, and it was set up by this character, and it has a capped amount of Bitcoins that can be produced, which is capped at 21 million. And the majority of those are already out in circulation. And the way that you can validate a Bitcoin is this process called blockchain, which is a virtual spreadsheet. And it records all the buying and selling transactions arranged in blocks, hence the blockchain. And it operates a four-year cycle where the people who mine blockchain, the value, the transaction that they pay out for the validation is halved every 4 years. So it's kind of squeezing itself down, and it can be bought and sold on a crypto exchange. And Bitcoin being the largest cryptocurrency, I think Ether token is the second largest. But there's a plethora of new sort of bitcoins that are being released. And some of that reflects back into that original documentary, which is available on iPlayer, if you want to catch up on it. Logan Paul, Bad Influencer. And the thing with Bitcoin is it's not regulated by government banks. So it's kind of a bit off the grid and has really been extensively linked with money laundering and criminal activity. But the reason it was in the news is that recently the value of one Bitcoin has gone past $100,000. It's actually getting towards $120,000, which is quite a big coin, I think, for most people. The way that you keep it is in a virtual wallet, and that comes in two forms, which is a hot wallet, which is connected to the internet, or a cold wallet, which is actually an offline version, a specially designed USB that can store your bitcoins and supposedly in a safer way. However, there is in the news a bitcoin miner who lost his hard drive, which disappeared onto some rubbish tip somewhere, with 8,000 bitcoins, and it's worth, well, it was worth 500 million, but recently it's gone up to 600 million, and on the current sort of terms, it's more like 800 million. So that's the kind of immense sums that are really sort of out and about. And reports of a young guy, when he was, I think, 16, inherited $1,000 from his grandma, invested it in Bitcoin, and now he's a Bitcoin millionaire. So it's amazing. But behind that, for the scientists in us, is how does this sort of massive system work? And there's a study from Digiconomist which talks about the power use. And they estimate currently that the system for Bitcoin is using 91 terawatt hours of electricity annually. And it estimates that that could vary up to as much as 150 terawatt hours of electricity, which is arguably more than the use of electricity of a country like Finland, or as high as a country like Poland. So massive amounts of energy going into Bitcoin mining. To mine one Bitcoin takes about 155,000 kilowatt hours of electricity. So that's really done by mining systems, which they use a special rig called ASIC Miner, which is an application-specific integrated circuit, and that deals with the Bitcoin produces a new block around every 10 minutes. To deal with that, obviously it's using huge amounts of power, but as a side issue, estimates are on the water consumption. A single Bitcoin transaction uses as much water as a home swimming pool, which is interesting. And again, in this study, the carbon footprints of mining is about 98.1 million tons of CO2, which is equivalent to the output of a country like Qatar. It's, say, 175 terawatt hours of electricity, which is equivalent to Poland. It produces about 40.3 kilotons, 1,000 tons of electronic waste, which is equivalent to the waste output of the Netherlands in IT and that's form. And it uses a freshwater consumption of 2,772 gallons, which is equivalent to Switzerland's use of freshwater.
Blimey.
So it's a monstrously huge sort of outgoing of electricity power, and the reason it's jumped forward is, I think, in the last few years, China's put plenty of restrictions on Bitcoin, because I think with the kind of government they've got, they don't like not to have control through the banks of it. And because of that, a lot of these Bitcoin mining operations have moved into the United States. And the upcoming president, Donald Trump, has said he's a big supporter and has taken lots of credit for the boost in the value of Bitcoin. But some of the things I think if you do get tempted to be involved is if you go and have a look at the program on iPlayer that I mentioned, you'll get to hear about a system called Pump and Dump. So this is where people in the know get early sort of access to forms of Bitcoin. And I say there are lots of them being created at the moment. Once they've got that knowledge, they let people know through the internet that this is a great thing. And then the price skyrockets because of the people being interested and looking to buy. And these people then dump their shares at the highest level. And all the poor people who are trying to follow their lead tend to pick up the tab downstream. So not the best of things. It's a very extensive and expensive system, but it is part of the future. I think, as I mentioned in our earlier program, a lot of the banks are looking at systems around the blockchain to keep their money secure. So it's interesting world, I think.
I think it's a very interesting world, Paul. Last week you covered weight loss drugs, which I thought was fascinating. And this, I just do not understand the Bitcoin. I mean, I agree with China on restricting something that's not regulated.
Yeah, it's. I think you'll get lots of opinions, but there are these tales of people who make a fortune. And also, say, on the criminal side, there was a lady in the UK was prosecuted for money laundering and apparently had $2 billion worth of Bitcoin.
But how do you... So if everybody cashed in the Bitcoin, where's the money come from? People who've invested in it?
Yeah, it's that's the issue with it. It's like stocks and shares. You know, you can say that this company looks like it's doing wonderful things and its share skyrockets.
Yes.
And then at some point it's got to deliver and you see through the flaws and it starts to fall. So the sort of thing about stock markets, stocks and shares, is being able to see, predict things that are going to occur before other people realise it. So you buy things that are climbing up, like the Bitcoin prices are going up, and then you get your money out and run as quickly as you can before it comes down.
Yeah, it's a very, very interesting one, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I think it's the science behind it, though, is
oh, yeah, yeah, it's mind-boggling, isn't it? I mean, you said this guy who lost his hard drive was worth $600,000.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, is he not a bit upset about that, then?
Yeah, $600 million is where he was going, and it's going north of that. Yeah, he's very upset, but he can't find it, so I think the problem, like a lot of things that end up on rubbish tips, is once they're in there,
yeah, you've had it.
A job to find.
Brilliant. Yeah. But on the final note, Paul, what thing that always interested me when I was younger, I couldn't quite get my head around it. If you had, say, £1,000 and you kept that in the bank, it's there, isn't it? If you kept £1,000 in your house, say, and it's set on fire, all of a sudden that £1,000 doesn't exist anymore. It's that I couldn't, I found that really rather interesting.
Well, I think I mentioned when we did cryptocurrency before, you read your banknotes, you'll find a little sort of phrase in there, which is, I promise to pay the bearer on demand.
Yes.
So the value, I think, probably, I think UK banking came up with the idea of paper script rather than bullion.
Yes.
Bullion had a real value that you could translate and deal with.
Yes, you could.
Paper money, like they said, when inflation was running wild, were we printing more money than we could back up?
Yes.
With bullion?
Yes.
Well, we left that relationship a long time ago.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, particularly for younger people who live in a world where it's a lot of things are done on your phone, you pay on your phone, or you don't handle cash at all.
No, well, I think it's why I like to look at behind the scenes on these things, because quite honestly, a lot of us go through life totally accepting whatever is the norm as you're going through and don't question it.
Yes.
And like a lot of people, if there was the sort of cataclysm that a lot of people predict is going to happen, how long could you exist if you couldn't have access to banks, money, electricity, gas, water?
Yeah.
Not long.
No, indeed. Not on that note, Paul. Cracking stuff as usual. All being well, we'll speak to you Monday on Glory Days Rock Show.
Look forward to it.
Bye-bye, Paul. Bye.
Cheers. Bye.
classic bit of Pink Floyd there with Money. We played that because RPG was talking about cryptocurrency. Do I understand that? No, I do not. So very interesting, as is modern life. If you've just tuned in, of course, you're listening to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM on digital if you're in South Yorkshire, or sheffieldlive.org. We're hoping the website will be back up and working soon, and there will be a podcast, because we've got Phil Muffett on the line from the Mexburn Swinton Astronomical Society doing his Christmas gift ideas special. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning.
And let me ask you first, are you still dressed as a reindeer?
No, I've had to get changed because I was getting damp and cold.
You are one crazy man. For people who don't know who you are a member of the Mexburn Swinton Astronomical Society, but you're also a member of Manvers Waterfront Boat Club, which gets you involved in all sorts of strange things, including this morning.
It does. So we did a charity run for cancer this morning. So we did three laps of the lake, which was 6 kilometres, and fortunately the weather's not been too bad.
It could have been worse, but I think you're mad, Phil, to be fair.
To be honest, after a lap, I think I was thinking the same.
And how did your elves get on? Because you've had elves as well this year, haven't you?
All right, all right. They've been absolutely brilliant. Everybody's been dressed up in costumes. My reindeer outfit's a bit soiled though now.
Oh dear. Hey, what happened to Santa? Come on, yeah, admit it.
We ended up throwing Santa out of the out of the place. Somebody's cut a log down, or a tree down, and there's a stump out the ground, and we kind of ran over it, and the wheel went over the log, and it kind of threw Santa out, so anyway.
So presumably Santa's not very happy at the minute then, either. So, this week you're going to talk about Christmas gift ideas. Oh,
it's a tricky thing. There's loads of little bits and bobs you can buy for people. It doesn't need to be a telescope. One of the things I think is a really good idea is a planisphere. So your planisphere is obviously it's like a plastic disc with the sky on. And it's also got like the hours of the day around the sides and seasons. And you can spin this round to any time of day or night to see what's in the sky. So they're really, really useful tools. And you can take them outside and get damp and it doesn't matter.
Because the plastic coated, yeah. they're like a dinner plate, aren't they?
Yeah, they're about the size of a dinner. You can get a 6-inch one or a 12-inch one. You're better off with a 12-inch diameter one. They're about £6.
Oh, so, bargain. Bargain.
Yeah. You can get them usually in bookshops. So if you want to do some shopping, you can get them in a bookshop. Or obviously most people get stuff online these days. But
they do. But be sure to get the Northern Hemisphere, I take it, because I guess there's planispheres for Southern.
That's right, yeah. They're made for the UK from the latitude of London. But they're okay for this latitude as well. It's only a couple of degrees.
Yeah, but you know, I've got one of the smaller ones from many years ago. The thing is, when you first look at it, it's quite complicated if you've never used one.
It is. So what you need to do is look at the date around the edge, because there's a month around the edge with all the dates on. So you find your day that you're at, and then the rest of it, the bit that spins round, is basically a 24-hour clock.
Right.
All you need to do is spin it round until you match the time with the day, and that will show you what's in the sky. So it's really, really simple to use.
So when you say it's in it, so you've done that, do you actually pick it up and look at it?
Well, what you see on your disc is what's in the sky. So if you're looking on your disc to the southern side of the disc, that's what you see in the sky looking south.
Oh.
If you spin it round to the north, and look north, that's what you see looking north. And then it's same east and west. So it gives you a good idea of what to see in the sky.
Wow.
You can plan what you're going to see. So during the daytime, you're like, well, what's going to be out tonight? So have a look. Well, Orion's going to be up about 11 o'clock, 10, 11 o'clock. So you know not to go out at 6 o'clock when Orion's, if you want to see Orion, when it's 11 o'clock. So you can waste a lot of time not knowing where you're looking. So the key is work out what's up before you start looking.
Yeah, great advice. So what else then do you suggest if you want to...
There's a Phillips or a Collins year almanac. Now, they're usually about £5 or £6, and it'll give you a 12 months of the year. It'll go through and tell you what's in the sky, like where the planets are and what constellations to look out for. So there's about an A5 size. So they really work well with a planisphere.
Oh, lovely.
You can use your booklet and your planisphere at the same time to work out what's in the sky and where things are. And there'll also be a moon map in there. There'll be a list of meteor showers, if there's any eclipses, where the minor planets are, where the planets are going to be throughout the year, so you know where to look and what to look out for.
Brilliant. Great to get young people.
You can plan a year's observing.
Great to get young people interested as well, because, you know, it's a traditional thing. It's not on your phone. You can go and get an app, but it's great to have a planisphere in your hand and a book.
It certainly is. It certainly is. Well, the next level is, and I use this as well, I use paper and books. I also use an app on my phone. I use the Celestron app, Sky Portal, and I also use the Stellarium. Now, Stellarium's free, but there's also one you can pay for, which gives you more up-to-date stuff. So if there's any comets or asteroids or any events happening, they'll update it. That's about £12. So I used to use the free one for a couple of years, and then I upgraded to the one you pay for. So if you want to buy something out for the phone, you're talking about £12 for the Stellarium app.
These sound like bargains, Phil.
Yeah. Well, it's good to start off with the cheaper stuff. Don't just wade in and buy a big expensive telescope, because it might be not what you want. So if you want any optics, then what the next level up is probably binoculars. You can get some 10x50 binoculars. You might be spending £50, or you might be spending £100 on a pair of binoculars that will put you in good stead, so you can see the basic stuff.
Yeah. So, you know that 10x50, can you just tell me what 10x50 means?
Okay, so 10 is the magnification of the eyepieces, and the 50 is the diameter of the objective lens at the front of the binoculars.
Right. So as you get more accomplished and you want something better, would those numbers increase?
Right. So people tend to look at comets with 80 diameter objective lens, and they might have 15 or 18 magnifications. So they'd be like 18 by 80.
Yes.
But they're a lot heavier, and then you start seeing, you're looking at having a tripod to put them on because they're a lot heavier. But you'll see a smaller area of the sky, but you'll be able to see more stars and more fuzzy objects, because they'll collect more light.
I remember years ago you saying that one of the best pair of binoculars you had was from Aldi or Lidl or something.
I got some Mead. Aldi did, I think it was Aldi, did a run on Mead binoculars, 10x50s, and they were only £10.
Oh.
And I bought a pair, and I've got a pair of Nikon 10x50s, and you can't tell the difference between them, and they were probably £120. So, there's some bargains out there to be had, but binoculars are a good thing to have, and you can see the moon with them and pick out craters. The thing is, with binoculars, you either want a tripod to stick them on, or use a windowsill or a shelf.
Yeah.
To put your binoculars, of course, just to keep your image steady, because if your image is wobbling about, you'll not be able to see as much, because you can't see the detail.
Yeah, but you can also use binoculars for bird watching, because I think you said that a lot of people, you may be a bird watcher, and then you start looking at the sky, and then you start getting interested in the sky.
Yeah. Well, I've got a spotting scope as well. That's got an 18mm objective lens, and to be honest, when I've been on holiday, I've used that for bird spotting, and I've used it for looking at the sky as well, and I've took photographs through the eyepiece as well.
Wow.
So, yeah, they're versatile.
So how much are they then, spotting scope?
Oh, you might be paying £200 £200, £250. There again, the Schwarzkopf ones, you might be paying £1,000 for them.
Wow.
So, but you're paying for the better and better optics.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then if you move on to telescopes, you're probably, Celestron are a really good make. You might want a 4-inch Celestron, which has got a mirror. So that gives good light gathering capabilities, and it'll also, you'll be able to get some reasonable magnification. Or you might want a 6-inch telescope, or even an 8-inch. But when you start talking 8-inch telescopes, you're getting a bit heavy.
Yeah.
And then you also probably want an equatorial one that's probably got a motor drive. Motor drive on telescopes is a really good thing to do. It gives you a lot more versatility.
But they're not cheap, I presume.
No. You're probably talking about £400 for a reasonable telescope, especially if it's got a go-to on it, where you can tell it what you want to see.
And oh, really? Oh,
it'll find objects for you. But there again, you need to know what's up in the sky. Use a go-to technology, because if you're looking for Orion's Nebula at 6 o'clock tonight, you'll not see it until 11 o'clock tonight. So yeah, you still need to have some knowledge about what's in the sky.
Brilliant. Now, I'm sure we could. The next question I'm going to ask you could talk for hours about this. When you decided you wanted a new telescope, you know, and you keep adding bits and pieces onto it.
Yeah.
What was the key thing that made you decide to buy the system that you bought?
I've gone for SkyWatcher because I borrowed one that somebody donated to the club, and it was so good, an 8-inch SkyWatcher. It was so good. I decided that's what I wanted to buy, and I got an equatorial one with motor drives. The one that we got at the club didn't have a motor drive on, but I decided I wanted a motor drive so I could do photography with a telescope, which is like a game changer.
Yeah.
Because you can do longer exposures and get better images.
But the thing is, it never stops, does it? So, you know, if you were buying again, would you buy the same, or would you think...
I think I would. The Celestron make and the SkyWatcher are basically the same telescope, but produced by a different manufacturer. They buy the same gear,
yeah,
put it together, and Mead and Celestron do that as well. A lot of the gears from the same manufacturer, they just put it together themselves and put their branding on it.
Interesting. So,
but Celestron's really good. The SkyWatcher's really good. And you can buy lots of different bits of kit to add onto it, and it's kind of off-the-shelf stuff, and it's not like specialist one-off stuff.
Yeah. So you could have if you got a telescope, you could have a whole list of extras that could be on your Christmas wish list.
Yeah, but there's things like solar filters you can buy at the front of your telescope, so you can do stuff on the moon. You can buy filters for looking at the sun, and then you can buy filters for looking at the moon as well. And then there's all the things like eyepieces you can buy. Usually eyepieces are a standard size 1¼-inch diameter tubes, and you can spend £20 on an eyepiece. You can spend £150 on an eyepiece, depending on what make it is and what quality it is.
Could be expensive business. Of course, you could just join a club.
You could join a club and use communal gear. So, which we do, we often use the observatory. It usually gets used once a week to find them more difficult objects, and that's all computer controlled as well. So, if you want to do some photography or find a comet or follow some asteroids, it's like somebody can put into your computer and it'll go to it, and you've got to do some imaging.
So, talking about your observatory, for people who may not know, your Mexican Swinson Astronomical Society have got their observatory at Huber, up at Huber, near Huber San, haven't they?
Yes.
You built it yourself, didn't you?
Yes, we did.
I still can't believe that either. It's quite an amazing place.
Yeah, yeah.
So, coming up, if you get bought telescopes there for Christmas, or you're just starting to, somebody's bought you a book or a planisphere, and you think, well, you know what, I'm not quite sure. Are you doing any public outreach events? Or...
Yeah, we do PVs at the observatory. They tend to sell out pretty quick, but we can only do like 20 people on an evening, and we just do one a month, and they probably go within the day we put them on sale. I think they're about £5 a ticket at the moment.
But that's a great, you know, for £5, it's a great gift, isn't it, for somebody?
Yeah, and you get like a lecture for an hour, and then we've also got like an hour on the telescope as well. So, yeah, it's a nice evening.
Wow. So that's, if you check out msas.org.uk or follow you on Twitter or Facebook, you advertise everything on there, don't you?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Oh, very good.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, another Christmas idea is, my daughter did this for me last Christmas. She brought me a Brian Cox ticket, and we went to Wolverhampton to see him at their theatre, which was really, really good. So I've seen Brian once before at Sheffield City Hall, which was probably about 5 or 6 years ago, and then I've been seeing him at Wolverhampton.
Did your daughter go with you?
She did.
Did she like it?
She loved it as well.
Did she? Well, he's pretty cool, isn't he, to be fair?
Yeah, yeah. And he was entertaining as well.
Yeah, he comes across as quite an interesting guy.
Yeah, he's a good speaker. He really is a good speaker.
But, he's done a lot to get young people interested in what are very complicated subjects.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know.
Well, physics, when I did physics at school, it was complicated. But I think part of it, not to diss teachers, but they didn't make it interesting.
No, this is it.
You need to put a slant on something to make it interesting to draw people in. And the thing is, McBrien's talking about exotic physics and astronomy, but makes it understandable for people to grasp.
It does,
and that's the key.
And that gets you hooked, doesn't it? It gets you hooked, yeah.
And then you want to learn more, and then you want to get involved and do stuff. So, but physics is really interesting.
Well, to be fair, Phil, you do a great job of explaining what it are when you talk, we talk astronomy and things like that. It covers everything, and you do a great job of making it sound so simple.
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously, a lot, some of it's complicated, but once you've got the grasp of it and you start to understand the basics, you can kind of build on that and make it interesting.
Yeah.
But I think it also helps when you actually do it as well. I mean, there's reading about things and translating that for other people, but then when you do it, it's for yourself, and you learn all those little tricks and things you'd not thought about. It just puts a better slant on it.
Yeah, amazing. So, you know, Mexburn Swinton Astronomical Society, if you say somebody wants to join your club, how do you do that? You just go onto the website and pay a fee? Or...
Well, best thing to do is probably come to one or two meetings, or we do sell tickets on Eventbrite for people to join in. And if you enjoy it or want to become a member, you can apply to committee.
Oh, apply? Oh, I say.
A request to join.
And pay your
fee, and we can sign you up as a member.
Brilliant! Because so, you now got a meeting place again, haven't you? Is it a church, village hall?
Yeah, we're meeting at the Mexborough village hall, which is opposite the old church in Mexborough. I think it's on Church Street in Mexborough.
And what evenings do you meet there? Is it
Thursdays? Thursdays about 7:30.
Yeah.
So usually an hour and a half, 2 hours. And what we'll do is we have people in the room. And then we also have it online as well.
Yeah.
So people who can't make it or are local.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Because two of our members do live abroad, as well as some people live outside of the area that can't make it to meetings. So
yeah.
They do join us online.
I'm going to have to let you go in a bit, Phil, because we've got the film showing after us. But just before you go, another one to plug. You are a member of Manvers Waterfront Boat Club, and you said joining that changed your life.
Yeah.
From couch potato to super runner and everything, and now you're tired and cold. And
mind you, I've only done 6 kilometres this morning.
You've done a lot.
I don't like doing Couch to 5K all over again.
So you can join, and you said it's life-changing because you're a great group of people. You do running, you do water sports, don't you? Water based, it's all safe, it's swimming, and it's at Manvers, so it's not far away. So check out mwbc.org.uk, I think it is. And get some more members, join up. You might see Phil running around with his reindeer outfit on. Oh, the mind boggles.
Swimming, cycling, you can do triathlons, duathlons, quadrathons, or just run, or just cycle.
But it seems like a great, great bunch of people, Phil.
Well, we're about 2,000 members.
Wow.
You still want to all turn up on the same day.
Brilliant. Great stuff, Phil.
Thank you, Phil.
Thanks for joining us. Now go and warm up and have a rest.
Okay.
Bye-bye, Phil. Bye.
Have a Merry Christmas.
You too. Bye. Merry Christmas.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You're a sky, 'cause you're a sky full of stars. I'm gonna give you my heart. 'Cause you're a sky, 'cause you're a sky full of stars. 'Cause you light up the path.
In the sky.